Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Santino Fontana. The actor has been on the radar of theatergoers for years now, since notable performances in shows like Billy Elliot, A View from the Bridge, Cinderella, and Sons of the Prophet. While TV audiences got to know him over two seasons on the CW's musical series, My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Now he's back on Broadway and earning raves in Tootsie. The new musical by Robert Horne and David Yazbek, the Tony-winning songwriter behind The Band's Visit, relocates the 1982 film comedy from the TV industry to Broadway, where the difficult actor Michael Dorsey finds his greatest role when he transforms himself into the actress Dorothy Michaels and gets a plum part in an ill-advised new Shakespeare musical called Juliet's Curse. Tootsie has been nominated for 11 Tony Awards, including one for Fontana for lead actor in a musical. And the actors in the studio with me to talk shaving, corsets, comedy, and the delicate personal and political dance of playing a man who's playing a woman. Hey, Santino. Thanks
Hello.
For being here.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
Congratulations on your Tony nomination.
Thanks.
How's it feel?
Great. It's, you know, I'm honored and flattered to be in such great company. Yeah. And thrilled for the show.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's nice when quite a few in the rest of the rest of your show is nominated as well, and it's kind of a big...
Yeah, four of us in the cast, and then, it's great.
Yeah.
We're having a great time, and it's great to know that people are also enjoying, you know, what we're doing.
Yeah. Does it feel different this time around, in that Tootsie is now one of the sort of, you know, awards contenders that everybody's sort of buzzing about? Does that make your experience of this time different?
No. Yeah. Sadly. I mean, in the sense, here's what's great. Especially doing a comedy that's this undeniably funny where individuals may not be laughing at everything, but right. The other 1,550 people in the house are. Right. So, in a way, it's great to see the community embrace the show and recognize and reward it and say we see it and we like it and you guys are doing well. Well done.
Right.
That's beautiful and lovely. But we also, like I said, you know, every night we get that from the 1,550 or 1,600 strangers who we've never met.
Right.
Who aren't, writers or critics necessarily, but audience members who are loving the show. Right. So that kind of has been the wave that really I think we're all really riding, which is, it's just so rare. I mean, I've been in so many comedies and dramas, but I've been in so many comedies that get half the laughs we get.
Yeah, I was going to say it is rare the number of jokes that land. I can't remember the last time I experienced that in the theater.
Amen. That's exactly how we feel. And as an actor, I feel that way. I mean, I knew it was funny. I knew it was funny, but I also knew I didn't expect the audience it to be. Every night is a bit of an amazing battle between the audience and the cast of fighting over who's in control over the show. Because, I mean, I saw a friend of mine came to the show the other day to a matinee that we were like, oh, it was bad. We were bad. And the audience was bad. Everyone was bad. And he was like, what do you mean it was bad? There was applause in eight scenes. And I was like, you're right. You don't see that. We're just living it. So
what happens when the audience takes control? Does this just the laughing keep
going
and going and going?
Well, it usually falls to me to kind of be the adult to be like, no, we're telling a story.
Is that easier as Dorothy or easier as Michael? Okay.
It's definitely easier as Michael.
Okay.
Because Dorothy would let, you know, yes. Okay. And also it doesn't ever happen in the scene. No, it doesn't happen in the scenes with her.
Okay.
It happens in the scenes with him. It happened on opening night. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
Within the first 5 minutes, I was like, oh, no. And Scott Ellis and Dave Solomon, the associate director, they came back at intermission. We were texting, and they were like, thank God you did that, because we would have...
But what did you do?
Just remind people that, yes, this is hilarious and funny, but it also is... There's a narrative of an imagined reality with circumstances that are not our own,
right,
that we have to engage and embrace in, and we're not going to let you... this isn't a stand-up comedy show. Right. So we can't just... Because I know where we're ending.
And is that you... Is that right.
You
is,
know, I can't... Oh, I got to turn the car around.
Right.
Like, so I know we have to... I just have to lay in what's really important about the story and for the character.
And that's you adjusting the dial on your delivery in terms of... Or...
It's, I mean, I wish I could explain. Yeah. I think it's like... well, you see it... You know what? You see it in like political debates. You see it where an audience is taking over and somebody, some opponent has to remind people about the seriousness of this. And in this case, this is a guy who can't get work.
Right, right.
So you have to lay that in.
Right.
Yes, it's hilarious and funny, and that joke was funny, but this man is about to make a terrible decision.
Right.
That is entertaining, but terrible.
Right.
So, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you have to make sure they realize that or we're sunk
right.
at the end.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about logistics, because I feel like, as I was watching Tootsie, it was easy for me to forget the fact that as you appeared on stage as Dorothy, and then you came back as Michael, and then you came back as Dorothy again, that it was very easy for me, like, it took me halfway through the show, I was like, wait a minute, that's hard. Like, there must be a very elaborate sort of dance that happens backstage in all those transformations.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, I really sort of ended up forgetting for a while that
that's great. That I mean, that's the happened, magic trick that we're trying to do. So,
but tell us a little bit about it. First of all,
sure.
Shaving. What? Tell me about shaving.
Sure.
What has to
I have
to
shave because I am light skinned and I have dark hair, which is the worst combination you could have.
Yeah,
if you're
that
trying,
was a bad choice.
Not good. Not good genetic pool. for this. I shave an hour and a half before the show starts. I have to shave, and it's in depth. There's hot towel, there's oil, there's cream, there's a brush, there's a single blade, like German Merker blades that goes one direction. I shave one direction. I repeat the whole process and I shave the other direction. If there is bleeding, and oftentimes there is, I use a styptic pencil. To stop the bleeding, I use a aftershave, and then there is, you know, we use another astringent before we start the makeup, which is an hour before, and that takes 30 minutes.
And there must be a whole makeup thing that happens.
There's
also when you...
Yes.
But when you change from character to character, does your makeup... I mean...
A little bit, yeah.
I don't even know how that works. What changes? And
well,
what,
great thing, the team of... There is an army of people working... They call themselves Team Dorothy, which Brian Stremwasser, Lauren Galatelli, Michael Ferguson, Margot Lawless, Sarah, Laura, all led by, you know, Joe Sibley and Jesse. No, it
is
expands.
That like 10 people? Like, okay.
It depends.
I was trying to keep track. Okay.
It depends on any given day.
Okay.
Who's in, who's out in terms of the crew and also what's going on, costuming, makeup. But there are people, like, there's one person only on my fingernails.
Wow.
So, you know, it's like a war movie back there. People are shouting. There's a lot of loud noises. There are strangers in the dark. There are flashlights.
Are you in the wings usually? Or do
always.
You guys go to... Wow.
Always.
Okay.
Yeah. There's never a moment. I will tell you, there are only two moments in the show where I have any time where I'm literally waiting. Mm. And that is at the very end of Act Two, there's a scene between... Andy Grotlucian and Sarah Stiles.
Okay, yeah.
And I have about 30 seconds there where I'm chilling.
Nice.
Which is nice.
Nice. What do you do?
I either go to the bathroom or I get water.
Sure.
And just kind of calm down. And then in the top of Act Two, kind of, after Andy Grotlucian sing a scene and song, and then Lily Cooper has a song, there's another like 30 seconds in there where he and I have nothing to do. So we have water and that's it.
Right.
But otherwise, anytime you don't see me, it's a war movie.
You're in the,
I'm in the trenches.
Yeah.
With a bra and elastic and a corset and makeup and nine people following me around.
And tell me about the wig. Was that the wig? Was that always the wig? Did you have to find the wig?
Yes, we did. I mean, Paul Huntley, this was, he did the
well-known
movie.
Broadway wig designer.
Yes,
but I didn't know that.
He did the first one.
Oh.
So this has been a kind of a great, and he had a kind of a complicated experience on that movie, I think.
Oh.
And he, But this has been kind of a great bookend, I think, for him. And we initially looked at... Initially, the first time we tried wigs, I was a brunette.
Oh.
And it was just my natural hair color. Right. And then they had photos of, like, Tina Fey and Julia Louis-Dreyfus and me, and they, like, mixed our faces up to try to see...
Was that creepy?
Yes. Yeah. It was not creepy. but William had led that charge, William Ivy Long. But...
The costume designer.
The costume designer. Yep. But then I was like, I think it's too... And we all agreed, it's too severe. It's too much like Michael.
Yeah.
What's the biggest... difference? And I remembered my grandmother dyed her hair red, had glasses, wore pearls a lot, and I was like, what if we go with my grandma's hair color? And then they started looking at that, and they're like, I think you're right, I think this is closer. And then it was a gradual process of figuring out. We did long hair, we did updos, we tried everything,
right?
And then they all weighed in.
How did putting the wig on change your... Or I guess of all the accoutrements that you were donning for Dorothy, what is the thing that defined it for
the wig is the most. Okay. The wig, I think, does the most for us because it's a huge... Not only just the contrast of between Michael and her, it feels... That and the glasses, I think, are huge.
Yeah.
They're huge. Those are the big things. Those are the things that definitely help... You know, you have to deal with hair... Her hair in a way that I don't have to deal with hair. You know, there's just an awareness. There's a physicality to it. And
right.
The same with the glasses. So, right. Yeah, those are definitely touchstones to help.
Yeah. And you have a corset and all that stuff. And
butt pads, corset, bra, yep. Shaving my chest, shaving my legs, shaving my arms, pantyhose. My mic packs are in my butt.
Sure.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. So,
wait, can you sit?
Yeah,
you
I
can
do.
Sit
yeah,
and
yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I recall you sitting.
Yeah, I sit a lot.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, so that's all, and that's all fine. But, yeah, it's a delicate, there are also mics in, I think there are like 8 wigs per show because the problem is you can't have a wig on and off and on and off and on and off,
right.
And it won't survive.
Right.
So they've also figured out, I think we're the first time there is an actual mic pack and the mic in the wig, separate from my mics is Michael, which are on my ears.
Okay.
So, it's elaborate.
Wow. And we haven't even talked about the dresses, the
costumes,
William Ivy
Long. Yeah. No, it's a lot.
And did you have to look for inspiration in terms of transforming yourself this way? Did you watch, I don't know, Drag Race or YouTube makeup tutorials? I don't even know what.
I did a short stint in Hello Dolly.
Yeah.
And I did, I put my face, I had a buddy of mine who does hair and makeup. I was like, can we do a rough pass just like us? Like what Michael Dorsey would have done.
Right.
Because I don't know anything about it. And right. I need to learn as he would learn. And so he, you know, we did the whole thing. We put makeup on. We did it. And then we did various levels of makeup just as a test on my own. And, I took my face and I put it in one of those websites where you can try every different hairdo. It's really I've only found them for women, not for men. But because then I tried to do it. I was like, I want to do that. So all these different hairdos. And I went around backstage like to Bernadette Peters. And I did. I went to Bernadette Peters and I showed her. And she marked the ones that she liked. Pretty girl. And not so pretty girl.
Aww.
The one she didn't like. And then I gave him to Victor Garber. I gave him to Kate Baldwin. I gave him to everybody and like just kind of got a rough idea of what everyone thought. But other than that, you know, we've got a great... The makeup designer Angelina Avalone and Paul Huntley and William Ivy Long and Scott Ellis leading the way. Those are who I put my trust and faith in. And that's as it should be. Right. So... I would speak up when I felt like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I just wanted to try everything.
Yeah.
And we did.
We have not yet talked about I imagine there was a whole voice thing going on for you because it turns out that women have different voices than men.
Mm-hmm.
So,
They do.
Tell us a little bit about sort of what's involved for you.
So 3 years ago when we started the whole process, initially there was no... differentiation in the music between Michael and Dorothy. And I was like, guys, we gotta do something.
In terms of the key, in terms of the
everything.
Style,
just,
all
we
the
hadn't
things.
I mean, granted, building a show is a huge undertaking. There are so many things to deal with. So when they're dealing with structure and they're dealing with tone and they're dealing with characters and plot and right. what is the show within the show and why, how much do we see of it and is it today? Is it the 70s? What are we doing? Right. I think the last thing on their mind was, well, we wrote this song. That's her song. Right. And I was like, yeah, but hold on.
Right.
If
right.
she enters speaking like this, she's got to sing like that.
Yeah.
And the great thing is I have the great voice teacher, Joan Leiter, who I have known since I was 20 or 19. When I moved to the city, we exchanged lessons for babysitting. I babysat her kid in exchange for lessons.
Aww.
Yeah, no, it's very sweet. And actually, last night, Doug Sills came to the show.
Oh, yeah.
And he, when I was 17, he was on tour with Scarlett Pimpernel.
Wow.
And my, who became my acting teacher, had gone to school with him and said, will you meet with this kid? I'm from Washington State. And we went to Seattle and said, will you meet with this kid and tell him how important going to an acting school is versus going to some other school? Right. And I met with him, and he, of course, was singing, and he also was a great actor. And right. he said, you know, go to the acting school, and when you want to sing, email me. And I went to college for 2 years, 3 years, and I said, okay, I think I feel like I need to start. If I really want to be able to do both, I need to start looking into that. He hooked me up with Joan Leiter, and that was... You know, that was in 2001.
Okay.
Ironically, yeah, wow. I saw the Full Monty that summer. That was one of the first, you know, Broadway shows I saw.
Right.
Which is hilarious. So, because Dennis Jones, who was one of the strippers in it, is the choreographer. David Yazbek wrote the music.
Yep.
So, it's full circle. Anyway, so Joan Leiter, she knew what the assignment was, and we started playing around with what can we do? And what's achievable 8 times a week?
And what is achievable 8 times a week? How do you? What is the name?
Well, the great thing.
Yeah,
I don't. You can't.
Like, what are you, a bass? You're a or not a bass?
I'll take it.
Yeah.
No, I mean the biggest thing, and I see this across the board, and it is a through line not only with my parents but the teachers who have really changed my life and helped me identify the kind of person and the kind of actor I want to be, as well as that applies to Joan as well. The through line is no one was interested in labels or categorization. So it's not a question of, you know, what makes you think you can do this? Well why not? Right. And one of the first things when I moved to New York, I asked Joan, I was like, people keep asking, am I a baritone or am I a tenor? And she was like, you just say yes. Mm. And then you sing it. And we'll sing it the way we want to sing it. You're capable. You're only limited by your imagination, which is exactly what all my acting teachers always taught me and what I think is true of humanity. So I can't tell you, I don't know, you know, right. what really I'm doing. I mean, I do know what I'm doing physically.
Right.
I don't know how to talk about it that well.
Right. Physically in terms of breathing, right? And
everything.
Kind of raising your
also a
register.
Corset.
And yeah, also
well, and
that.
Also, like, for example, like a man's, typically, and it's not every, you know, there are 8 million different types of men and there are 8 million different types of women.
Right.
So on average, however, the average male larynx and vocal cords is about the size of a quarter. Mm. I believe a woman's is about the size of a nickel, I think. I remember we talked about that. But so basically you're just thinking, okay, so things are getting smaller.
Mm-hmm.
There's your vocal cords are stretching. You're making all these different shapes in your body.
Right.
You know, it's no different than playing, you know, you would think about this for any character.
Right.
How are they different than me?
Right.
How are they most different? And in this situation, we wanted to make sure there was a contrast between Dorothy and Michael, which is, I think, you know, it's vital.
Yeah. Is it how much more challenging is this kind of both singing and kind of vocal range for you? That
well, it's definitely unlike anything I've ever done,
100%.
Yeah. I will say one of the other real gifts of doing this show is that in the same way that I think people feel about Dorothy, including like my wife, who sometimes wishes I like hung out with her as Dorothy, and I'm like, that will never happen. Dorothy cannot exist in stress. So the fact that Michael is continually banging his head against a wall and unable to see what's in front of him clearly, she is able to walk in on air, both physically and vocally. Right. So it's a constant cool down.
Right.
So all the screaming and all the, you know, angst of Michael and all the, you know, all that crap is then countered by her ease.
Right.
And I think that's what's keeping me alive.
Yeah.
I don't really know. I'm knocking on wood. I hope. But so far, so good.
We now that we've talked about all the sort of physical challenges, we haven't yet mentioned the, in some ways, even bigger challenges of sort of addressing this story, telling this kind of story in the contemporary climate. Things have changed since 1982, which is great. But also, what do you guys do with it, right?
And exactly right.
How have you come to think about it?
Well, I mean, I do think it's a testament to both Scott and Carol, our producers, and Scott Ellis's leadership and direction, and Robert and David Yazbek and Andrea Grody, our music director, as well as a pretty damn progressive cast of people who are not going to say crap that we feel like isn't taking in the whole picture. And I think what Robert has done so brilliantly is address all of the issues head on. And not only head on, but making you laugh while it. Which, you know, there's a great, and I've said this before, but there's this great Billy Wilder quote: if you're going to tell people the truth, you better make them laugh or they'll kill you.
Right.
And 100% that's correct. I mean, Jeff says, when I come in, my best friend, the guy who plays my best friend, Andy Grotlichen, the character of Jeff, says, when I walk into the restaurant
Bill
as
Murray
Dorothy.
Bill Murray in the movie. Yeah.
He says, what is it? You have the when women are clutching back their power from between the legs of men, you have the audacity to take a job away from one by perpetrating one. And Michael's response, in his complete hubris and unable to see it, is, "You're not focusing on the positive. I got a job." You know that, and that I think encapsulates. It tells you what our show is, and also why it's a great story to be told. I mean, any story of somebody learning empathy by pretending to be someone they're not and realizing the gravity of their terrible decision and actively then trying to make amends for that, that is a story we all need to be telling over and over and over again.
Yeah. Who did you go to for advice as you were? It sounds like you talked to Rebecca Traister.
Straight to the top.
I
was like, well, you know what? It's a great story. So I initially...
Did you know she loves Tootsie?
Hold on.
Apparently
it's
she
great.
Does?
You're okay. going to love this. Great. And I haven't told this to anybody, I don't think.
Great.
So William Ivy Long and I both initially we were like, we've got to... And William's kind of a family friend. He did my wife's wedding dress and he did Cinderella and I love him.
Yeah, right.
I was like, we got to... This is scary. I mean, also, this was all happening. I mean, this has been in the works for years, this show. So all of the stuff that's happened, which personally for me, I was so thrilled to finally see some form of justice for the myriads of people I know who have been mistreated and harassed and abused. So that was great. And then also at the same time, we were like, wait a minute, how do we do this?
Was there ever a moment where you thought of throwing in the towel? I wondered that. Mm. Like if there was like a time in November 2017, for instance.
I did not. Okay. Because I think it makes it even more important that it shines even more of a light on what the hell have we been just dealing with and thinking it's okay. And what a great opportunity to put someone literally in their shoes and be forced to face it, and we can laugh about it and learn about it. So that said, William reached out to Gloria Steinem.
Sure, as you do.
All right. maybe she's busy. And Emily Mann at the McCarter Theater, who is also a friend, and we went to the same college, and she reached out to Gloria as well to try to put us in touch. And Gloria was very lovely in an email saying, I would love to meet with you guys. I'm very busy doing this thing. But you know what? We can talk in the fall of 2018. That was after Chicago. So I was like, absolutely not. And a playwright friend reached out to me, Winter Miller, great playwright, who said, I think you need to make sure you guys do this right. I love you. I support you. But I'm also worried for you. And I was like, so am I. So I literally, and she mentioned Rebecca Traister, who I'd seen on TV and I'd read some articles, not a lot. And I Googled out of nowhere, Rebecca Traister, Tootsie, and she has a tweet where she says it's her favorite movie and that no matter whose bad behavior will take it from her cold dead hand.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, that's good. So, and then I went on Twitter and I saw that she was friends with Kate Baldwin and Kate Baldwin was friends with her. Kate Baldwin was playing opposite me in Hello Dolly and I was kissing her every night. So I said, Kate, why are you following Rebecca Traister and why is she following you? And she said, oh, we went to college together. Okay. Kate, as my wife said, this is beshared. This is meant to be. I have to talk to her. She's like, well, let me email her. She's very busy. And I was like, no, I understand. She got us in touch. We had lunch. And then I found out that Rebecca Traister spoke at Michael Friedman's funeral in Philadelphia at the Germantown...
This is the composer Michael Friedman, we should say. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
The composer Michael Friedman who passed away last year.
Last year? Year before?
And I had done a bunch of readings of his work and was a friend of his. And she spoke at his funeral, which was at Germantown's... Germantown Friends Quaker School in Philadelphia, which is the same school that my wife went to, Michael Friedman went to, and Rebecca Traister went to. And I was at that funeral, and I was like, she spoke at his funeral. Okay. So I was like, listen, I think of myself as a forward-thinking progressive guy. I want to fight for the equality for all people. I believe in that to my core. However, I don't know what I don't know. And we got to get this right. And I feel like in all that's happened politically and socially and in the climate recently, I do see a lot of my friends who are like-minded guys afraid of insulting or offending or disrupting the moment, instead of engaging in a respectful way, pulling back and becoming silent. And in the same way, being as silent as the people who want to rewind progress. And I said, how do we deal with this? And she smiled. It was like, well, you started off on the right foot. And I was like, thank God. And I basically read everything she wrote. She was working on her Good and Mad book. I listened to it, the audiobook version, and she and I would talk. And she basically just reminded me that all of the superficial stuff, the easier funny stuff, the physical stuff, the corset stuff, all that stuff, the makeup, that's all true. And fine. But the bigger thing is that men don't have to worry, was I hired only because I'm attractive? Did I not get this job because I didn't respond to the flirt from that guy? I don't have to worry about walking to the subway at 1:30 in the morning in the same way that a woman does. Those things. And that, you know, I knew that and I felt that and I fought for it with my friends and... But when she said it, it just, you know, it was such a great North Star to continually follow. And to the writer's credit, they all met with her. They all, it was like a huge, duh, just remember, this is big. This is important.
Right.
We can't mess this up.
Has working on this show changed the way you think about some of these issues at all?
It's definitely broadened my awareness. Mm. You know, there's always going to be more I don't know than I do, and that will never end. I will say my trigger finger is definitely more accessible when I see women being mistreated and my instinct to want to correct the record. I have to be careful. I mean, I was at an iPhone store with my wife the other day and a man came in and started berating this woman working and doing stuff that happens in the play. And I wanted to unleash on that guy. Like, you are, oh, terrible. So that's definitely changed.
Right, yeah. So let's also talk a little bit about your work on screen. You've done some, you know, some TV and film work. And a lot of theater fans were also fans of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. So, you know, they saw you on TV then.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy that kind of work? Where do you see yourself going in the future with that?
Like, I love all of that
in terms
stuff.
Of fitting into what you, your theater stuff.
I mean, I think I want to be able to do, you know, I want to be able to do what all my, I want to be able to just play great parts and great stories working with great people. And I want to continue to believe that we are only limited by our imaginations. And in all, you know, I want to be in all, there was someone at Stage Door in terms of working in all mediums who came because they were fans of Shades of Blue, which I died in like episode 9. Ray Liotta threw me off of a building.
Okay.
Like, Saperstein, why'd you have to die? We loved you. We heard you could sing. We came. So I was like, great. And then 2 days ago, I did an audiobook called You, written by Caroline Kepnes, which is this very dark kind of serial killer story, which is great, which is now a TV show.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a TV show now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but I did the audiobook before.
Okay, yeah.
And it has kind of this cultish, which is great, in a great, the best version of the word cult.
Yeah, right.
Following, and people came like, I love you. I listened to it, and then I heard you were doing this, so I came. So that's already happening, which is kind of amazing, and I have to pinch myself, but as well as Frozen and Cinderella.
Yeah, right, of course.
I mean, and Fosse Verdon, just we
yeah,
shot
just
that a couple
happened.
Months ago.
Right.
So, yes, variety is the spice of life. I became an actor because, well, for a lot of reasons, I think I've been trying to avoid an identity as long as I can. And if I wanted to be the same person all the time, I would never have been an actor. So that's great, you know?
Have you watched the last couple seasons of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, in which your character was played by another actor?
I love Skylar Astin. I did not. Okay, I have not. But I also, to be fair, I don't watch me in anything. I don't watch anything that I really
that you've been in.
Not really. Yeah. I mean, I've tried, and I usually just end up incredibly angry at myself.
Is that also true of something like Frozen, where you're not actually watching yourself?
Well, no, okay. Frozen. See, Frozen, I've seen probably 3 times. Yeah. So. But no, because then I give myself... I watched Frozen. This is insane. The first time I saw Frozen, I gave myself notes during it like, oh, you should have waited a beat there, Santino. And I'm like, waited a beat? It's animated. They edited it. Yeah, I'm not doing it.
They did
That's
that.
That's not
yeah.
my timing. You know, like, so that is hard for me. So no, I don't. I don't watch... To be honest, I don't watch as much TV as I probably should. I don't. Sadly.
Are you in Frozen 2? I don't actually know.
I as of now, I am not.
Okay.
However, I do not
could
know.
Change, right?
That could change.
Right.
I would love to be, I will say.
Sure. you're in Tootsie for the foreseeable future, it seems like.
Yes.
And what... Are there roles out there that you feel like you've always wanted to play? Is there...
I mean, yeah.
Male or female that you've always wanted to play?
Oh, boy. I think, yes, there are, and yet I feel like the life of an actor is the life of having your heart broken, because either you're bringing that vulnerability on stage every night, which you should be, and that's our job. You don't get a job you wanted, your heart's broken. You finish a job that you loved, your heart's broken. Or you're playing people whose hearts are broken. And I feel like I've tried to limit the ways my heart can be broken. And I think having a wish list of roles is one of those ways. However, that said, no, there. You know what it is, too? And I think a lot of actors feel this way. I was supposed to do Pal Joey at the Kennedy Center with Christine Baranski that Terrence McNally had rewritten.
Mm-hmm.
That was... Oh, God, a long time ago now.
Yeah.
I was so excited. I was like, oh, this is going to be so awesome. It ended up falling apart at the last second, like weeks before we went into rehearsal. Heartbroken.
Yeah.
But I realized it's not about doing Pal Joey. It's about doing that kind of guy, that kind of character. And I was able to find that in another gig. You know, it's that stuff. So do I want to play Henry V? Absolutely. Does it need to be Henry V? No.
Right.
Richard II. I want to play him. Richard III. Does it need to be those people? No. The Seagull, Hamlet. You know, it's all the obvious ones and more. And also, I mean, I text with Stephen Karam all the time about, like, where's the next play? Send it to me.
Yes, this is Stephen Karam, who wrote a play that you were in, Sons of the Prophet.
Sons of the Prophet, and he won a Tony for The Humans.
Yeah, also
He's a very good friend. And, you know, I couldn't have imagined Joseph... You know, that character in Sons of the Prophet. And whereas I wanted at some point in my life, I'm sure, or I know, to play Lewis in Angels in America, Joseph's a pretty damn good alternate.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't plan for that.
Yeah.
So, and there's similar strains of all those people. So, I don't know. Does that answer that?
You did answer that. And I was about to challenge you to describe what Shakespearean role... Dorothy was, but I guess the easy answer is Juliet's nurse, because that's the Shakespearean role she's playing.
Yeah, but she's got a little Beatrice in her, got... I love that question. She's also got...
there's like some Rosalind in there, maybe.
Absolutely, Rosalind. Or... Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Yeah. There's Rosalind. There's Beatrice. There's... Oh, that's a fun question. I love that. What's her name in... what's her name? Oh, Constance, King John.
Oh, wow.
A little
bit.
When she gets upset.
All right.
I see it.
Yeah.
I mean, Yeah, I'd say. Yeah, that's a good mix.
Well, we look forward to seeing you in whatever Shakespearean role, whether it's in Shakespeare or not, that you play. Yes. in the future. And enjoy the rest of your time. And let's see.
Thank you.
Enjoy
all this.
Yeah. Thanks,
Adrian. Thanks for having me. Yep.
That was Santino Fontana, Tony nominated for lead actor in a musical in Tootsie, up for a total of 11 Tonys and now playing at the Marquee Theater. If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, please rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. And for all you podcast junkies out there, I'll be in Nashville from May 31st through June 2nd for the first PodX conference, bringing together your favorite networks, podcasters, and podcasts all in one weekend. If you're in town, come say hi. In the meantime, I'll be back next week with another current Tony nominee, the Emmy and Tony winner, Bryan Cranston. Until then, see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.